And it is about 10 minutes after 9 o'clock. You've got it on KHUM, and our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign continues. This week, we've been looking at the culture of aggression and looking at it from various different standpoints. And for the first time ever on our Stop the Violence campaign, we are going to be dealing an entire segment with the Latino community. And joining me here in the studio, we've got Jean La Pietra and Aide Hopkins from Promotores. Thanks for both coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us on.
Absolutely. So I guess let's get a little bit of background on who you are. You were telling me just a little bit off air. So Jean, just a little bit on your background.
Okay. I currently work as a community services officer at the Humboldt County District Attorney's Office, a liaison with Spanish speaking. And prior to that, I had 30 years of social work. Wow. With child welfare.
Fantastic. And Aide?
I am a social worker for the Paso a Paso program, and this is part of San Joseph and Redwood Memorial Hospitals. I have worked with them for about 5 years. Previous of this, I worked for North Coast Children's Services, and I am here because of my experience in life with domestic violence and aggression.
Well, thank you both for coming in. I really appreciate that. So I guess let's just jump right in on this thing. We've talked a little bit about this ahead of time, but many different cultures have a culture of machismo, as does the Latino community. And Gene, you were telling me a little bit off air, you know, kind of it's the its beginnings and how that really got started and what it really meant back in the day.
So, yes, earlier in Spain and in Portugal, the original meaning was, one of the words was caballerismo, which is the equivalent would be gentleman. Mm-hmm. And it talked about a man's duties to look out for his wife and children. And it was a chivalry, a masculine code of behavior, of honor and chivalry. And then the word, as time went on, you know, the word became macho, which was another word from Spanish, which meant male. And it still continued into the man's responsibility to provide and protect and defend his family. However, in about the 60s and 70s, we had some movement in feminism, and then people started looking at the culture as some sort of domineering and a violent behavior.
And was there a shift in what the term meant at that point?
Well, the term at that point then became a negative connotation. It was negative aspects, and it created a, it sort of helped create the sense of powerlessness within the Latino male. It quote unquote represents all that is wrong with a man, and it's related with drinking and violence, drugs, just all sorts of things that that don't benefit the family and a woman.
And, of course, you know, anytime there is some kind of domestic violence in a family, there is always an element of secrecy. There is always an element of, you know, hiding what is going on. And, of course, that that plays very well into the culture as well of keeping all this a secret, being male dominated, if you will, and just all of this is just hidden away. That goes just across the board with all aspects of domestic violence. How does that play into the Latino community?
Well, I can tell you that we have a saying in Spanish that la ropa sucia se lava en la casa, the dirty laundry it washes at home, which means that whatever happens in the house stays in the house. Therefore, a lot of us that work with the community, we have a sense that the violence, domestic violence of abuse is happening in the homes, but the families are not willing to talk about it. They don't talk about it because it's a secrecy. It's a family secrecy. It's something that is, stays here. It happens here and stays here. So the way that families start talking a little bit about it is when you start establishing a relationship. That's one thing that we as workers in the community have with the connection with the Latino families, is that we start working with them. Let's say our program, we do parenting classes, prenatal classes, and also breastfeeding support groups. And they start coming to the, our classes, and little by little, they start, you know, we start building their rapport, and then they start saying a little pieces here, there. But I will say, almost never tell you the whole story. They never tell you, I am a victim of domestic violence. You have to connect the dots to figure out what's going on, and you have to be skillful to try to find out how to provide them with information, how to do a safety plan in a way that is not so openly that the man will notice it, or in a way that you're being culturally sensitive so they know that you're respecting their privacy.
So with that culture of what happens in the home stays in the home, what happens in the family stays in the family, that makes it especially difficult for a woman to reach out and get help in a situation like this. And you said you have to be sensitive, but I imagine just even for a woman to even say anything is very difficult. Yes?
That is correct.
Yes.
Part of the program that I'm involved in, and also working as the promotores, is education. Many people who come to this country, this is a surprise to them. They're not aware of what the laws are. So it's an education of what is domestic violence, which can include physical, emotional, financial, and even sexual. So part of the thing through the classes that Paso a Paso gives, we begin to tell people about this. And another way that we found that has been effective in bringing people to want to do something is when they realize the damage done for their children and even their unborn, if they're fighting or things like this are going on in the family home.
Absolutely. So There are plenty of sources out there for the Latino community to reach out to, but many people may not know what they are. I've put on our website, on the Stop the Violence website, a resource page, but you're telling me you need to update a few of the numbers on it. Are there a few numbers that you would like to give out for a few organizations right now while we're just talking about this?
Sure. There's the Humboldt Domestic Violence Services, and their hotline number is 443-6042, and they have a Spanish-speaking advocate who works there and can deal. She's been very effective in working with the community of late. There is the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1-800-799-3223.
Going off
check
memory.
On that. I'm going to check on that.
Okay.
Well, talking about resources in the community, I think that's a big issue that we see as people who work with the Latino community. That's a barrier that exists in our county, that there are not a lot of bilingual providers, or there are some people who know a little bit of Spanish, but not enough for the families to really comprehend what the people says. And that's a big barrier, not only for the domestic violence victims, but for anybody who is monolingual in Spanish, that they cannot access the services because of the lack of resources. No lack of resources, I'm sorry, that's not say it the correct way. There are resources, but no provided in their language or in a way that they feel confident to come over and say, Cliff, you know, this is happening to me. Can you help me out? Because they're afraid that you might not understand them speaking their language, or you might not understand, you might not be sensitive to the culture because you don't know certain pieces of the culture that I guess the only way you know them is living in there or have lived with them for a long time to be able to understand those little sensitivities.
So, and of course, the Latino community is the fastest growing community here. So, I mean, there does need to be more and more resources all the time. Now, Aide, you were talking before that you have experience with domestic violence. What is that experience?
Well, I can say that I have experiences because I grew up in a family where my father was an alcoholic. He, one of the meanings of domestic violence is that let me read this and see if it's right here. That a man has a strong, this is according to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a strong sense of masculinity, pride, and exaggerated masculinity. I'm sorry for my accent.
No problem.
Exaggerated or exhilarating sense of power and strength. And I relate this to sexuality. Somewhere in the research, in the reading that I was doing it, I read that men, as the macho men in the Latino community, they feel more macho the more sex they have. And so it's very common in the Latino culture that men have the woman at home, the wife, the mother of the children, the one who takes care of the children, the one who provides for has the lunch ready or the dinner ready when he comes from war, the one who is there for him, to serve him, to serve his family. And, of course, they have the one on the other side. And besides having the one on the other side who gives them pleasure and have the good time, they can go and have sex with other women. My dad was one of those men. He will work. And as soon as he had his paycheck, he would go to the bars and spend it all in alcohol and women. And then when he come home, he'll expect my mom to be waiting for him with his warm plate of food at 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And he would want to have sex with my mom. Who wants to be with a man who went to spend all the money out there and now he comes home and has nothing? And so that happened when I was growing up. And that is really, like Jean said, that affects you. Affects you in many ways. Luckily, I was the youngest by that time. And I remember listening to my dad arguing and fighting with my mom. I remember my dad putting a gun in front of my mom's head.
Wow.
And I remember him kicking her out the house at 1-2 o'clock in the morning. I remember things that I wish I couldn't remember because they still hurt. And I see how this has affected my older siblings in different ways. Luckily, in a sense, we are productive human beings because we are responsible, we have a job, and we are survivors, and we have a strong sense of responsibility. But I know that it had affected our minds in many ways. And also, I see this in the community that I'm working with. That's experiences that, in a sense, I connect with them. Because it's hard for me when a mom tells me, I don't know what to do. Is that I am tired of his attitude, but I don't know what to do. They feel trapped. And I understand that because my mom, when I didn't know about domestic violence, I keep asking myself, why my mom lived through this? Why did she let my dad do this to her? I love my mom. I love my dad. Even though he did what he did to my mom, I love him because in his own way, he was responsible, which is also part of the positive machismo. Because once he stopped drinking, nothing we were never hungry once he stopped drinking, of course, not before that. He always provided for us. He made sure that, at least for me, he paid for until my school, until I finished high school. It wasn't the same for my older siblings because they had to go to war. My sister had to go to war when she was 11 years old to help out the family. And in a sense, she said that it was her escape to be away from the house so she couldn't deal with the problem that it was happening between my mom and my dad. And like many of us know, and like you mentioned it before, once you're a victim of domestic violence or there is domestic violence in the house, it doesn't affect just the woman. It affects everybody. Because, like I say, my sister said that was her escape. At 11 years old, a child, he went to work. And that hurts to me. It hurts me because my sister and my brother, they didn't have a childhood. They didn't have a childhood. Somehow I did. Because my dad stopped drinking when I was 10 years old and things changed a lot. In the sense that it wasn't physical abuse. But the emotional abuse, it was there until the last day of my mom's life, I believe. And I think that's one of the reasons why my mom died so young.
Wow. Eddie, thank you so much for sharing that, first of all. That's a lot to share out there. And you bring up a lot of interesting points where it's part of the culture, as you were saying, you know, this type of behavior. But this is not, this is of course not exclusive to the Latino community. This happens all over the place. But one thing that, how is this pattern being changed? What efforts are being done to change this pattern in the Latino community to keep it from happening to future generations? Because it does, as you said, it affects the whole family. And young boys in these households, they see how their father behaves and oftentimes will perpetuate that down the road. So what efforts are being done to break this cycle?
Well, like they said, there's a lot of education campaign, just first letting people know what is considered domestic violence in this country, then educating about the damage to the children, talking with families about learning other ways to deal with the conflicts, counseling services. And the Promotores movement, which is a group of Spanish-speaking individuals, workers, agencies, volunteers, and we get together and we try to disseminate this information into the community. So each agency, each volunteer has that information. They take it back and share it with people that they know, and on and on. And it's just a beginning. There's some internet information, the National Domestic Violence Hotline. There's a program called No More Violence. And there's some PSAs that are going on in other stations in other parts of the country. And I wanted to repeat the phone number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline. In case I gave it wrong, is 1-800-799-7233. And they not only have Spanish, but they have a multitude of languages. It's 24 hours. Anyone can call and just have a conversation if they want to learn what's going on.
And Jean, before we got on air, you had a little piece of paper that had like a little poem, if you will, a prayer at the beginning of a relationship. Why don't you share that? Because I thought it was appropriate.
Yes, they and I thought that this was this really speaks to the issue. So this is a prayer. It's a night before a wedding, a girl kneels down to pray. She prays for three things. Dear God, please make my husband faithful to me. Dear God, please keep me from finding out when he is unfaithful to me. Dear God, please keep me from caring when I find out he is unfaithful to me.
Wow. That is something else. And Ide, as you were saying, that unfaithfulness in the relationship of your family, do you think that also was kind of a gateway and led to the abuse and in the household?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, that's very common that men have children from the marriage. I have two sisters. My brother have two children with two different women, which I'm not proud of it. But it happens. It happens a lot. The sad thing is that in many ways, the women have learned to accept it, like this little joke / prayer says it, that sometimes when women realize that and they question it to her partner, her husband, they get upset. Most of the times, of course, they will deny it and they get angry. Like a friend of mine says, we get angry because that's our way to control you, our way to stop you, our way to... And like Jean said, we're trying to educate women, so they're getting a little bit... Some of them, they're getting a little bit stronger and they're starting to speak up a little bit more. They start questioning things more. So when they start questioning these things, that's where the aggression can start. And also we know... as a fact, the studies have proved that when women realize that they're in domestic violence situation and they want to leave the house, that's when the domestic violence escalates. Either when that happens or when they're pregnant, that is very common too. It's not necessarily just because of the unfaithfulness of the man, but there are other issues also.
Yes, absolutely. And in all cultures, that is generally the most dangerous place when someone wants to get out of the relationship, wants to end this domestic violence. That can be the most dangerous part. So having a plan is very, very important. And that is where reaching out to one of these organizations can really help, because they can help you come up with a plan. Just necessarily leaving is not necessarily the safest thing to do. There has to be a place to go and a plan. Your finances have to be looked at, because oftentimes some of the control is financial as well. They're the main provider. And one thing we should mention also is that Promotores is not only for women, but it's also for men as well to come to meetings and find out. And I think it's a very important thing, is for men to redefine machismo. You know, what you know, be a man to your family and be faithful to your family. You know, be this is, you know, part of the whole thing. While we're talking about it, let's before we wrap up, let's just talk about Promotores and really what it's all about.
Sure. Promotores is a group that I don't know if you have heard of LatinoNet. LatinoNet is a group of people who works in the community and different agencies. They get together trying to provide better services for Latino community. Well, when we used to meet with them, we realized that it was the need of for the Spanish-speaking workers to have a safety net, let's say, to talk about it freely in Spanish, to support each other, because they really understood the culture. They knew the kind of support that they needed that many other people might not understand. It's not that they don't want to provide it. It's just that they don't understand the differences in the culture. And so we asked for that little safety net, and that's the way we started as a subcommittee of the LatinoNet. A small group of about maybe 10 people or so, we started getting together about, I believe it was about 2003, I don't remember the exact year. But then we continue on, and we started getting a little bit more responsibilities and trying to do more and more for the community. We're not a large group compared to the promotores in other areas. Promotores is a national, I would say, worldwide movement. But it's the biggest here in California. And they have a conference in September every year where people from other countries and in other states come over. And about over 1,000 promotores, I say, they get together. And it's a beautiful feeling to be in an enormous room full of people of color. It's great. And because we support each other. We support each other in many different ways, not only through our job, but also as Latino people. Just the feeling to be there is great. But anyways, the promotores here in the community is formed for different, like you mentioned, it, people who works in different agencies, people, volunteers from the community. We have a few men in our group, but anybody who has a Latino heart and who wants to work with the Latino community, they're welcome to our meetings. And they're the first Friday of each month in the lower level room in St. Joseph General Hospital. And we meet from 9 to 11:30. We are organizing ourselves. There's so many issues in the Latino community that we want to cover all of them, and it's impossible, impossible. We're trying to go step by step, little by little. But like I say, if anybody has the heart to help out the community, especially the Latino community, and they want to come out and help us, they're more than welcome. We still, we're trying to organize our group in little subcommittees, because that's one thing that happens with the Latino communities, is that one family gets to trust you. They come to you from A to Z. Oh, my baby, I'm having problems breastfeeding. Oh, I want to apply for my green card. Oh, my son has problems in school. So we are everything for them. And we don't know everything. So we try to do those connections, and that's why we're trying to do later subcommittees, to be able to provide more services. But we're still growing, we're still learning. But I think this is a grassroots movement that it's little by little. We have had little tiny successes, and we're still working on it.
Excellent.
And as Jaime mentioned, the meetings are the first Friday of every month from 9 to 11, and tomorrow morning will be a meeting. If anyone's listening and interested, please come.
All right, Promotores, you guys are fantastic.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, we are out of time, but Jean LaPietra and Jaime, thank you for coming in and talking.
Thank you
and
very
sharing.
Much for you letting bet. Us come on and educate the community.
You bet. Thank you so much. And we continue the campaign tomorrow with our two-hour roundtable discussion, which gets underway at 8 o'clock. This will be a chance for folks to call in as well. Sherry Johnson and myself will be hosting, but we will also have Professor Max Schnur coming back from HSU, also Jennifer Eichsted, a sociology professor from HSU, Bill Damiano, who's the Humboldt County Chief Probation Officer, and, of course, you. Will certainly be welcome as well. That is tomorrow morning, starting at 8 o'clock.